It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday, and I'm always glad to get your calls. There is a lot going on in America tonight. Tensions between President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions are said to be rising. Is this going to come to a head like other situations have within the Trump cabinet, or is this just more fake news from the fake stream media? How close is America to the threat of nuclear terrorism? Author Robert Gleason has a brand new book that'll give us the details on that. A bill passed the Senate today making bad employees who work at the VA accountable, at least more accountable for their actions than they have been. That's a big step in the right direction for veterans to get the care they need. If a lot of you have wondered, why can't you fire bad employees at the VA? It's because until this law change, you simply couldn't under the law. Illegal aliens are getting some advice from their phones, but will it stop their deportation? I'll tell you about that story, too. And is the failing retail giant Sears throwing down a Hail Mary with some really crazy T-shirts they're selling that are highly offensive to those of us who care about the state of Israel? And be sure to cast a vote today in my quick poll at LarsLarson.com. The question I've framed tonight, should Amazon give discounts for customers on food stamps or welfare? Well, it turns out that Jeff Bezos' company is offering a 45% discount, not on the goods sold on Amazon, but on the Amazon Prime account that's designed to offer free shipping and a lot of other side benefits. He's now offering a gigantic discount if you happen to be the holder of a food stamp card. And does that make any sense? Our quick poll tonight is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values I subscribe to. Just go to amac.us to join, not .com. That's amac.us. AMAC is better, better for you and better for America. In last night's quick poll, we asked you, should President Trump privatize the nation's air traffic control system? 78% of you joined me in saying yes, and other federal agencies as well. 18% of you said keep it in the government's hands, and 4% said only privatize air traffic control. Well, based on that quick poll, it sounds like an awful lot of you would like to see the government out of air traffic control, handed over, as I suggested, to a private nonprofit corporation that can run it for the best benefit of both the airlines and the people who fly on those airliners as well. Glad to have you with me tonight. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. Follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. President Trump has criticized Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, for recusing himself from the investigation into any links between President Trump's presidential campaign and the Russians who sought to influence the election, a decision that Trump apparently believes led to the appointment of a special counsel to supervise that case. The president has grown sour on Mr. Sessions, according to sources, blaming him for various troubles that have plagued the White House. And immediately after the London terror attacks, when the president began to speak of the proposed travel ban from six Muslim countries, he also criticized the DOJ for offering up a watered-down version of that in place of the original seven-country ban that was the first proposal from the Trump White House. I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that, and I imagine we'll get more information even tonight on what's going on there. Glad to get your calls, 866-439-5277. Let's go to Barbara in Mississippi. Hey, Barbara, thanks for listening on the Super Talk Network. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars, for taking my call, and it's concerning the security clearance on which the lady has leaked the information. My husband worked for 25 years for the plants in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. which required him to have a high-level security clearance to have access to any part of the plants. And this security clearance was updated ever so often. There was a battery of pages you had to complete. Now, when he was sick, and they called because they were getting the background on people who had worked in the plants and came up with illnesses. So they called, and when they did, they were asking him certain questions, and he refused to answer some of the questions because of the oath he had taken on this security clearance.
Well, that's central. So, it sounds like somebody who could be trusted with American secrets, doesn't
it? He was, truly, truly. And this lady, it really troubled me when I heard this, and I thought how far we have gone from being secure with our information.
Yeah, we have. And the fact that I'm not opposed to the idea of private companies doing work for the NSA, but if they're going to do that kind of work, they ought to do it knowing that if they allow sloppy procedures for handling that secret information, that the consequence may be that they will lose that contract altogether. Barbara, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Joe. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Good evening. I just wanted to comment on the fiasco with the leaking of top secret information to echo what the previous caller stated. As a military member with a top secret clearance, I can tell you that we are trained on the importance of safeguarding our nation's secrets. And it's unfortunate that things have evolved to a point where you have Edward Snowden's, you have Chelsea Manning's, you have individuals that have taken advantage of the position of trust that they're put in to leak our national secrets. And hopefully this person will be made an example of, because unfortunately with the past, our inability to do anything with Edward Snowden, the pass that Chelsea Manning received, you're going to keep seeing these things until we hold these people accountable for breaking the law and signing a document where they're, you know, put in a position of trust and violating that nation's trust.
Yeah. See, I find this, I mean, Joe, at the surface level, it's a violation of the law. It's a violation, I'm sure, of her employment agreement with that private contractor. But I find this incredibly arrogant, because you're deciding, just as Edward Snowden did, I know better than everyone else. And the fact is, all that secret information is being held for all of us. We don't need to see it to know that it's essential for a government to have secrets, to have information, and to be able to use that to safeguard your security. So when one individual thinks, well, I know better than the rest of the country, I think they're dead wrong. They'll put the security of an entire country at risk because they believe that their own personal political beliefs and their own personal political loyalties supersede those of the rest of the country. That is so incredibly arrogant, it's hard to believe that anybody thinks that way. By the way, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your jobs to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your jobs to 100-plus job sites and do it all with a single click. And then ZipRecruiter's powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your jobs, and they do it better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Screen, rate, and manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. Back in just a moment with honestly provocative talk for the United States of America on the Lars Larson Show.
Opinion alert. It's honestly provocative talk on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday night, and I'll get back to your phone call shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. We've talked about the threat of nuclear annihilation because of terrorism for a good long time. A long time ago, it was the Soviet Union that was the threat. Today, there are a number of countries on the planet's surface that have nuclear weapons, but some of us are more concerned about the idea that a terrorist group might get a hold of a nuclear weapon as well. I've invited Robert Gleason on, who's the executive editor at Forge Books and the author most recently of Into the Fire, who's spent a long, long time, a whole career, researching the threat of nuclear terrorism and the possibility of nuclear annihilation. Mr. Gleason, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
So where do we sit right now from your vantage point?
Well, one of the problems is that there's just been too much nuclear bomb fuel proliferated. That one of the things that's not completely understood is that a nuclear power reactor, that if you have the equipment from an old dairy or an old winery, it takes a half a dozen technicians about 6 months to build a nuclear bomb fuel reprocessor. And we've sold nuclear reactors to practically every nation on Earth. In fact, we declared in 1953 it was an inalienable right for all nations to have nuclear power, nuclear power reactors. And there's two, if you have particularly the bomb-grade highly enriched uranium, you get a chunk the size of a large grapefruit. You put one chunk like that on the floor, you have the same size chunk, hold it up 6 feet above it. And if you drop one on the other and it hits it square, you can get between 50% and two-thirds of the Hiroshima yield. It's the most explosive stuff imaginable, and there's just too much of it. It's too available, and some extremely unstable nations such as Pakistan have it. We've had, in the United States, we've been proven over and over again that we can't properly secure our nuclear bomb fuel.
Now, why is that? I mean, we managed to secure a lot of other kinds of weapons, and I know we have accidents from time to time, but what would it take to actually get a fully secure system, at least within our country, even if we can't directly force these other countries to do the same?
Well, you could secure the sites with the military instead of rent-a-cops. I'm friends with an 86-year-old nun with a heart condition. In fact, she just turned 87, Sister Megan Rice. My book, And Into the Fire, actually, my novel, I should say, I dedicated it to her. And she broke into the Y-12 nuclear facility several years ago, cut through at night, cut through the fence with a bolt cutter, and went to the big building where they store 100,000 tons of this highly enriched bomb-grade uranium. That's the stuff I described. If you drop one chunk onto the other, you can get half the Hiroshima yield. And she was there several hours, spray-painted peace slogans on the walls, sat on a curb, sang hymns. Finally, a guard stumbled onto her. And by the way, they attempted to give her life in prison. She was eventually, the decision was overturned, and they said it was a gross miscarriage of justice. You know, she was a peacefully protesting 86-year octogenarian nun. They actually convicted her as being a nuclear terrorist. But we've had what they call mock intrusion tests, where people go in and at Los Alamos, 50% of the time they would steal the bomb grade explosive. The old Rocky Flats installation, they used to steal it 90% of the time.
But let me ask you about this. I mean, I'm not a nuclear physicist either, but in all the things I've read about it, weapons-grade material is, what, 80% plus pure, whereas the power plant material is supposed to be down in a much lower range, 5 or 10%?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. The installation she broke into in these mock intrusion tests, they were facilities that stored bomb grade. In fact, typically it would be closer to 90%. It's not that hard, by the way. In my novel, And Into the Fire, I melt down a couple of nuclear power plants. It's not that hard. Again, they're very poorly secured. And as Fukushima taught us, you want to melt down Indian Point, say, which is 35 miles from New York City. All you have to do is, put some C4 on the cooling pumps and blow them up. Because then it takes 5 billion gallons of water a day to cool off these nuclear power plants. At Indian Point, that's what it takes. And they very quickly, the water boils away and everything goes critical and catches fire.
You know, I almost wonder, Mr. Gleason, I'm a fan of nuclear power. I think that it's a great source of energy. But I think maybe the reason we've become so lackadaisical about security is that it's no longer an industry into which we're putting a lot of time and attention. It's almost as though I think some of the folks who don't like nuclear would like these plants to age out of existence, be decommissioned, and that would be that. So as a result, the companies aren't paying as much attention to the security for these plants as they might have if we had an active nuclear power program.
The companies don't pay their bills. As Forbes magazine said, it's pure socialism, that banks will not loan a nuclear contractor money to build a plant, that insurance, you have to have full coverage. Insurance companies will not grant full coverage to a nuclear power plant. They refuse to pay for the decommissioning of the plants. They don't do anything about the nuclear storage. There's a law that says we have to have an underground repository. They've just ignored that. They keep storing the stuff in pools. You know the most expensive machine on Earth? The Sheffield Nuclear Power Plant. It was just built in England. It cost $35 billion. The only machine that's more, and it was all paid for by the English government. No private company has ever paid for a nuclear power plant. It's pure socialism.
I get that, but, you know, France does a fairly good job, and they reprocess all their fuel, which means at least you're bringing all the spent rods back to one location, reprocessing the fuel, and then at least you have some control. But as you point out, at a lot of the decommissioned plants, you leave the rods in storage containers, you cool them with water, and essentially you just kind of store them there because there is no permanent repository, as you point out, as the law requires.
Well, France has been trying to build one for about 20 years now, La Flabino, and it's up. The last time I looked, it was up to like $16 billion, and they still can't. These are very complicated, very difficult machines to build. You know, you can build a gas turbine
that runs on natural
power
gas
plant for about $1.5 billion. You know, for 10% of what it's costing. And I'm not sure you can build a nuclear power plant anymore for under $20 billion. Now, President Obama is the first president since Nixon who's tried to build a couple. But, I consider my book to really be, you know, sort of like The Stand, you know, Left Behind. It's a big apocalyptic thriller. It's not really a tome about nuclear power or anything like that, though I do melt down a couple of nuclear power.
Well, because that sets off all the trouble that puts people into the fire, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's out of the frying pan and into the fire. Also, I consider nuclear terrorism to be kind of the fulfillment of Revelation. When they talk about stars coming down from the heavens and hitting the earth, a nuclear weapon, particularly a thermonuclear weapon, is really nothing but a miniature man-made star that's detonated on the earth. The same processes that go on inside a thermonuclear weapon go on in the heart of a star. And it's also the avidity which we have peddled. You know, we invented the arms of Armageddon, and we have retailed that nuclear technology worldwide with an avidity that is really biblical in its implications. That most people don't understand the Book of Revelation. The first chapter is actually supposed to be chapter 13. In chapter 13, an angel comes down. Says to humanity that you're consumed by greed.
Well, we're gonna have to read it in your book, Mr. Gleason. I appreciate the time. His book is called "An Into the Fire." Coming up, a bipartisan bill to hold bad employees at the VA accountable. You're listening to Lars.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me and glad always to take your calls. We'll get back to those shortly. You know, Vistaprint is all about supporting small business owners. And I can say, as a small business owner myself, they offer great products. Business cards, postcards, flyers, banners, they got it all. And believe me, I reach out to them for all the things that my little talk show needs, because we need business cards, we need banners, and we've ordered them from Vistaprint. And anytime there's something not right, not very often, they set it right. And how's this for a deal? 500 business cards for just $9.99. Now, you can upgrade to a much better business card, but I went online myself. I used their software. And I'll tell you what, I'm no design genius. I'm certainly not a graphic artist. And yet I came out of it with some really great business cards. And when I needed something else, I turned to them for help. Check it out yourself. 500 business cards starting at $9.99. Just use my name, Lars, at checkout. That's Lars at checkout. It's a 50% savings over the regular site price. The quality is great. They're easy to customize. Even a dummy like me can do it. And you can't beat the price to try 500 business cards for $9.99. It's a chance to get that professional look on any budget. So don't wait. Go to Vistaprint.com and order today. Now, there is some fantastic good news. Usually, I'm about bringing you some, concerns I have about things that are going on, things that aren't going quite right. Tonight, I get to talk to Dan Caldwell, the policy director at Concerned Veterans of America and a former Marine. Thanks for your service, Dan. And isn't it great to actually celebrate something right happening for a change?
It is. It is good. And Lars, thank you for having me on again to discuss some of what's going on in regards to the VA. But yes, we do have some good news to celebrate tonight. The Senate passed the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act, which will make it easier to fire bad VA employees. And it goes over the House now. And it will probably be voted on early next week and probably passed and then to the president's desk. And Secretary Shulkin can now fire people more easily once this is passed into law, something that he has asked for and something that we at CVA have been talking about for a long time. So it's really good to see this bill moving and likely to get signed into law here in the next couple weeks.
Well, and at this point, there's really no doubt that in the House of Representatives, it'll get a good solid vote, both from Republicans and perhaps even a few sensible Democrats. What do you think?
I think it's going to get an overwhelming number of votes. You're unfortunately going to have some members voting against it because, you know, they get a lot of support from some of the unions that are opposing this bill. But I think you're going to get over 300 votes in the House, if I had to bet.
But in a lot of ways, Dan, that's a good thing, because then we have an election in a year and a half, and we can merely point out to people around the country, your congressman, probably a Democrat, voted against the VA Accountability Act. Take that into account when you go to the polls, and I think that may have a positive effect on America as well. Isn't that right?
That is correct. I mean, in the past, Concerned Veterans for America, we've pointed out when members of Congress have voted the wrong way on these issues, and, you know, we, in a few cases, have expressly advocated for people who've done the right thing. But normally when we point out they've done the wrong thing, in many cases, even though we're not telling people to vote for or against them, when we tell their constituents that they did the wrong thing on helping our vets, they usually aren't around after the next election.
No, and that's a good thing as well. Now, let's get into a little bit into the weeds on the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act. What does it actually allow the VA to do? Because, you know, that a lot of us have been frustrated that it's taken this long to get here. But do we have enough, enough teeth in this thing to make it actually work?
We do. The biggest thing that it does is that it speeds up the termination process for employees found guilty of misconduct, and it ends the practice of allowing VA employees who already have been found to have done the wrong thing or been consistent poor performers, of allowing them to sit on paid administrative leave, so in effect sit at home or sit in a no-show job, while they're appealing their termination. And what it does is that you only have 21 days after you're notified of termination to get notified and actually get removed from the payroll of the VA. And then while you're appealing your termination, you're not getting paid. So that's huge. That eliminates something like you saw in Phoenix, where you had three of the senior leaders at the Phoenix VA where you had dozens of veterans dying on secret wait lists. You had three leaders sit on paid administrative leave for close to 700 days. And this was after, mind you, they'd already been found to involve in the wait lists. So this bill would end that practice. And that's a big thing that it does.
I'm talking to Dan Caldwell, who's the policy director at Concerned Veterans of America and a former U.S. Marine. So, Dan, let me ask you this, not to get too optimistic. I'm not that much of a Pollyanna. But is it possible that this starts to bring about changes in the VA, just the fact that people within the agency, who I'm sure are following this just as closely as you and I are, because it affects them, that if they now know I can get fired and the standard is changing dramatically with this new law, does that have the potential alone to start shaping up the performance of the VA I've always thought that it's a very powerful thing to know I can get fired for doing a bad job in terms of motivating people to do a good job.
I think that it will send a message that the old way of doing things is over and you better shape up or ship out of the VA. But, you know, I want to be I want to be realistic here while at the same time also being optimistic. You know, at first the bureaucracy is going to resist this. The majority of your VA leadership outside of the political appointees that have come on board with the Trump administration have not supported laws like these in the past. They attempt to undermine them, and it's going to take a while for Secretary Shulkin, and he has a new office. The president created the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. It's going to help him implement this, but it's going to take a while, just like everything else, to really instill this within the bureaucracy and to implement it properly. But it will definitely send a message, and I think the message in many ways has already been sent, is that, you know, Secretary Shulkin has made it very clear that he thinks accountability is very important, and he's taken it seriously, unlike the previous administration, where they would only give lip service to it but not actually back up their words with action.
Well, you know, you remember that before the Congress, he said to the Congress, if I don't do a good job, fire me, which I think is a real positive way to look at it. It's nice to have somebody acknowledge that they actually have responsibility. But let me ask you what else could happen. I mean, you've got a VA secretary, and I don't want the president to overstep him. But what would happen if the president and the VA secretary held a news conference and said, we're going to have a different standard here, and we're sending the message down through the ranks. When people are out of line, let us know about it. We'll act on it. When people get out of line and we can prove it, they're going to be fired, and send those dual messages. One, tell us what's going on. And two, there will be firings, and anybody who tries to help cover up the misdeeds or the, you know, the negligence of somebody else may feel some consequences as well. Do you think the president should use his bully pulpit to send that message as well to the whole VA bureaucracy?
Absolutely. And I think that actually both him and Secretary Shulkin have done that multiple times. Just a couple weeks ago, Secretary Shulkin went to the White House and gave a press conference called the State of the VA. And he was very, very honest about the problems at the VA. And he really dived into the issues that he has disciplining employees. He's got 1,500 disciplinary cases that are pending right now. That's 1,500. And that's a significant number of cases. And he's trying to get through those, and he cited some of them. They included cases of people still at work at the VA, of one individual who's in jail for 60 days for repeated DUIs, one VA employee who was found to have watched pornography with a VA patient.
That can't continue. Dan, keep up the good work at Concerned Veterans for America, and thanks for your time tonight, and thanks for your service to America.
Thank you, Lars, for having me on again. And if you want any more information about us, go to www.tv4a.org.
You got it. Thanks very much. The Lars Larson Show continues. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me and glad to take your phone calls and emails. This isn't a problem that is only restricted to one part of the country. All across America, you're hearing about crazy acts by some of the students and even some of the faculty on American college campuses. But most recently at Evergreen State College in the state of Washington, the students there have decided to stage protests and do things that literally put even the faculty at risk of their lives, to the point where at one point a professor at Evergreen was told by the police, you best hold your classes off campus. It's not safe for you to be on campus, and he had to do that. Well, I've asked Representative Matt Manweller to join me today, who has introduced some legislation that might just correct this problem or at least send them a message. Representative Manweller, it's good to have you back after too long.
Yeah, it's been a while, but thanks for having me on.
So what's your idea about Evergreen? What should we do with a college that's not even safe for the faculty to be on the campus?
Well, I think we should make it private. You know, associations and organizations have all the First Amendment rights under the United States Constitution to say things and in many cases do things, but they don't have the right to do it on a public dime. And if you want to be an institution of higher education and teach physics and math and accounting, then I think you should have taxpayer funding. But if you want to be kind of an indoctrination factory, then you should do that on your own dime.
Is that what Evergreen has become, an indoctrination factory?
Oh, it's been that way for a while. I mean, it's got a well-known reputation. There's some very good professors, and they have a very solid science program. You come to that college, you're going to get one viewpoint and one viewpoint only, and you're going to engage into an almost McCarthyistic environment where dissent is not tolerated. You know, the same type of peer pressure and ostracization that made McCarthyism so effective in the 1950s is, I think, the environment that you're seeing on Evergreen campus.
And ironically enough, isn't this kind of lack of tolerance for dissent coming from the folks who call themselves progressives and advocates of diversity?
Oh, well, there's no instrument large enough to measure the the irony or hypocrisy that, I mean, if you think about it, in about 50 years, the most progressive liberals in America have come full circle and are advocating for the same type of segregationist policies that Bull Connor argued for in 1950s Mississippi and Alabama. It's just, it is bizarre how we've come full circle, except that now you have the hardcore left arguing for Jim Crow laws and segregationism and things of that nature.
And just in case, Representative Manweller, that somebody thinks, well, Manweller's kind of overstating it, he must be exaggerating. There were students who literally told professors, we want a day without white people on the campus, correct?
Yeah, I mean, they had kind of flipped a longstanding tradition to be something more coercive and forceful and said, look, we should have a day on campus where there are no whites. And, you know, Professor Weinstein, whose family had run into this issue before in 1930s Germany, said, look, no, my family was already run out of town once, and we're never going to stand up for that again, and I'll be here, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to teach my class, and I will never be silenced because of this color of my skin. And my goodness gracious, you'd think that he had committed a horrible hate crime, you know, and they attacked him, they attacked his wife, they attacked his students, just mob rule, something out of the Salem witch trials.
So why did the administration go along with the students then?
Well, I mean, some of the concerns were safety. I mean, you can imagine if you were a university president in a room with only one exit and you've got 100 students acting like a mob, you might feel a little uncomfortable to stand your ground. And it's unfortunate that it's gotten to that point.
Ask you, Representative Manweller, am I too Neanderthal-like to suggest that the right solution is to tell the students who are leading that mob, keep it up and you're expelled from school? We'll erase your scholarships. We'll erase the credits you think you may have earned. You know, we have a cudgel that we can use to knock you upside the head if that's what you need. But you're not going to be allowed to behave this way in the same way that, I mean, they're saying all whites off campus, and they're saying this to a Jewish professor. I mean, imagine if some school said, we want all the Jews out of this organization, or we're going to cause all kinds of trouble. We don't tolerate that kind of thing in America. So why would the administration not say, keep it up, and you will no longer be a student here? You can go off on your merry way and go find a job some other way, or find a school that's willing to tolerate you, but we're not going to tolerate it. Why didn't the administration answer it that way?
Well, you know, and I wish they had. And that was what we expressed to the president and said, if this is to happen again, we hope that you will stand your ground and you will hold the students accountable and you will discipline them. And, you know, all of those options you laid on the table are absolutely legitimate. And in some ways, that's what I'm doing with my bill, Lars, is that, you know, just as we're all accountable to someone, I'm accountable to the taxpayers. And our message to them was, if you're going to behave like this, then you should not expect taxpayer support for the institution. And so even if the students weren't expelled, in some ways we're threatening to expel the university from public funding if they don't get their act together.
Am I wrong that a lot of this is being driven by a very small group of students on that campus? Or really is it the majority feeling on that campus?
I have two responses. Yeah, I mean, if you talk to the people on campus, they say it's about 200 or 300 radicals out of 4,000 students. If you look at the letter that was written and signed by the faculty, right, that was just Orwellian in its nature, calling for the punishment of Professor Weinstein because he dared to speak his mind. 50 professors signed that letter. That is about a third of the faculty. And when you have the third of the faculty taking its marching orders from a McCarthyistic Orwellian ideology that says this person does not agree with us, so therefore he should be punished, that's what scares me more than the crazy aspects of the students. I understand these are just a bunch of silly kids that are 18 to 20 years old. But when the adults in the room are modeling the crazy behavior, that's where you have a concern.
Well, and it sounds like it, because I remember that one of the things college campuses prized themselves was, come here, we are a marketplace of ideas, and we'll offer it all, and it's all welcome here. And now it's become, as you say, Orwellian, where you step in line with what the conventional wisdom of that university is, and if you step out of that line, you're academically and professionally dead.
I can tell you that as a college professor myself, I see that on a daily basis, where students come to me and say, you know, Professor Manuel, or I disagree with the professor. I want to speak up, but I'm afraid that if I speak up, my grade will be lowered. I want to write a paper about this topic, but if I draw this conclusion, he'll grade me down, and I want to go to grad school, or I want to go to medical school, or I want to go to law school. You literally have students on campuses across the country who are pretending to be somebody they're not, just so their grades don't suffer and their careers don't suffer. And again, it just reminds me of actors in the 1950s who were terrified to take certain roles for fear that, you know, Joseph McCarthy would come for them, you know, and you hope that we would never go back to those dark days. And just again, the irony that this is coming from the far left is just palatable.
Professor and Representative Manweller, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. We'll have you back real soon. Thanks very much. That's Matt Manweller. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.